The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Matt!
Media Productions.
You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why. Why it ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon.
Go ahead. All right, guys. So,
sorry.
So, huge week just happened. Not only are we off last week's podcast where we were on location, I was in Mexico, Matt, you were in Chicago, and we had a great episode with Candace Michelle. But also this past week, we had our first ever live show and we met for the first time. I mean, there's so much going down between us, man.
Yeah, it was really great to meet you, Robbie. It's crazy. You flew in, you flew out. We barely had a chance to see each other. We spent more time on stage with each other than we did off stage. But I guess that's the life of a wrestler, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of. But I tell you what was a little weird. I got out of the car. I was ready to have a conversation with you. And guys, Matt stuck his arms out and gave me this really weird, awkward hug. And I'm not going to lie, Matt, it was kind of weird.
You're not a hugger?
I was expecting a handshake and his arms around, and I'm like, he's my co-host. I guess I got to hug him, but do I give him a tight hug? It was awkward.
Yeah, I'm really sorry about that. I'm a hugger, man. Especially, it's Robbie E., man. We're buddies, man. We've been on the air with each other for 6 months now and ruling the airwaves, and it was great to see you, and I wish we would have spent more time together, but we had a great live show with Marcus Alexander Buff Bagwell, as well as Glacier. Lots of fans in attendance, and it was a great time.
Yeah, no, it was great, and the fans were interactive. They got to ask questions. Everyone that came enjoyed it. And, the thing is, Sunday afternoon, we were the last show of a long weekend, and for those fans that still come and stick it out, we're really appreciative, and we're already looking forward to and planning our next live show, which is in the works. But enough about that. What about last week, Candace Michelle?
Man, what a great story. All the heat she had, her story of coming in and being the GoDaddy girl. People love the show, and people call it a sleeper episode. I would agree.
I would totally agree. She had a great story to tell. She was super fun and energetic. And you know what else is super fun and energetic every week? It's the Wide Ended podcast, and you can follow us on Twitter at Wide Ended, on Instagram at Wide Ended, our Patreon page. Guys, you are kicking butt getting those episodes early and special episodes, because we just dropped one 2 weeks ago, right?
Right. We have a bonus episode up with Dangerous Danny Davis, and you guys have been getting the episodes sometimes a week in advance. And we love interacting with you on Patreon and Twitter. Make sure to check us out on YouTube on whereitended.com. And coming up today, we have Shannon Moore. You want to say anything about Shannon Moore?
Oh, shit. Yeah, I didn't know if you were stopped or not.
No.
Say that one more time.
But coming up today, this week, we have a very interesting guy, Shannon Moore.
Yeah, awesome dude, the Prince of Punk. He's always had such a great look. You know, I know him inside and outside of the ring from our time together in Impact Wrestling. And he's got a really cool story from Omega to WWE and WCW and back to WWE and TNA and all this in between. So I'm actually looking forward to hearing some of the stuff that I probably don't know about his early days. But he's ready to tell all.
Well, coming up now then, without any further ado, the Prince of Punk, 3 count, Shannon Moore on...
Why... You say it.
It ended.
I was supposed to say ended.
Stop using your hand. .com. Now, of course, you know by now about our great sponsor, Pleasure Products USA. They are a huge supporter of Why It Ended and also your online destination for innovative quality and affordable items geared towards men's sexual pleasure. As you know, or you probably should know, their signature product is the 3V Starlet Stroker. That's right, the 3V Starlet Stroker. It has an amazing, realistic internal texture, multiple vibration settings, and for the finishing maneuver, an actual voice of an adult film star is recorded to the device to make more than the crowd pop. Now, if you're not sure about this, and this is all new to you, check this out. You can try a free, that's right, a free stroker. All you have to do is just pay the shipping and handling of $6.95. For just $6.95 shipping and handling, you can get a free stroker. All you got to do is go to pleasureproductsusa.com/promo. That's slash promo. And enter the coupon code FISTBUMP. So whether you're going to get the 3D Scarlet Stroker, or you just want to dip your toe in the water, so to speak, with this free stroker for only $6.95 shipping and handling, make sure to check out our good friends at StopUsingYourHand.com. Now remember, to get that free stroker, go to PleasureProductsUSA.com/promo, and the coupon code is FISTBUMP. That's pretty funny. But you know what's not funny? PleasureProductsUSA.StopUsingYourHand.com. Today. All right, guys, joining us today is a wrestler you definitely know from WCW, from the WWE, ECW brand, and WWE, as well as TNA, and is a member of Three Count and also the Prince of Punk. Today, we're joined by Shannon Moore. Shannon, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. Just trying to get my power back on in the house, but other than that, everything's good.
Hey, is it a common thing there for, because you live in Florida, right?
Yeah, man. I've been living in Tampa for, I don't know, almost a year or something now. But dude, these storms, I've never seen it before. Every time a storm happens, it just seems like your power goes out for 2 hours. It's ridiculous.
Oh, well, at least it's only 2 hours and not 2 days.
Yeah, right.
It must suck if you're in the middle of giving somebody a tattoo, right?
Yeah, I know. Right? Actually, that happens a lot around here. At the shop that, guest spot at here, they, they have power outages. And that shit sucks if you're halfway through a tattoo.
Oh, my God. As it gets dark, you do that one little crease in the line and fuck somebody's shit up or something.
Well, today, lady, you're getting half a unicorn. That's what you're getting.
Yeah. Sorry, it looks kind of like a penis, but
later. And so I know because I remember when I was in early high school, late middle school, I remember seeing you for the first time, and I knew from watching as a young kid that you were super young, and obviously, you know, you were one of the smaller guys at the time in WCW. So that's when I realized, like, wow, that guy's really small, like small wrestlers, this could like really happen. So when did you actually start pro wrestling?
Me, Matt, and Jeff, we did the whole backyard thing. You know, I was like 8 or 9 years old.
Well, how did you meet them? Did you grow up in the same town or something?
Yeah, we were just friends in the same town that just loved wrestling. And it just went from there, man. Matt and Jeff, they had a trampoline. And they started building the ring at their house. And then, you know, we all just started living characters that we've seen on TV, just kind of mimicking what we've seen on TV and our heroes. And it just went from there to turning the trampoline into like a half hard, half trampoline wrestling ring to just finally getting a hold of a real ring. And actually when we got the real ring, that's whenever we really started, you know, training, because we ran across another guy that actually was a trained professional wrestler. His name was John Savage. And I think he's the one that kind of smartened up, you know, and at this point, I'm really young too, Matt was the older one, and he was more of the business end of things. So him and John started talking, and John started teaching what it is to be a real professional wrestler and the basics and stuff.
We
seen on TV.
Well, was the John guy charging you guys, or was he just being nice and helping you out?
Nah, he was just being nice. He was just an indie guy in the area. And, we very quickly, picked it up and kind of what we did. We started our own promotion, and John was, you know, just pretty much full-time on our promotion at that point, and which evolved into Omega later. And Omega was actually, you know, pretty successful brand whenever it comes to the shows and stuff that we put on at that time, just because, you know, there's 14, I don't know, maybe even 20 guys out of our Mega promotion that actually went on to be in either WWE, WCW, ECW, TNA. And, you know, now we're getting into the second generation of guys that come through our, Trevor Lee, you know, his dad was one of our originals back in the day that helped, you know, start Omega. And then, you know, now like Trevor Lee, God, he was a baby, like just born. And, you know, I remember just holding him, watching pay-per-views and stuff whenever we're at his dad's house studying wrestling. And just now, you know, Trevor's one of the greatest wrestlers in the world.
Absolutely. Trevor Lee is an amazing wrestler, one of my son and mine's favorite. And for us old school wrestling fans, we think about the greatest areas ever to produce wrestlers, you know, West Texas State University. Also the Robbinsdale, Minnesota area, you know. But that Cameron, North Carolina area has produced so many wrestlers in the last 20 years. And it was just, from what you're saying, just a bunch of kids. Even the promotion literally was a bunch of kids watching stuff they've seen on TV and being self-motivated and just going out and getting it.
Yeah, man. Like, we, you know, where we grew up, Cameron, at that time, like, there wasn't but probably 200 people that existed at Cameron. And it was just a farming, just country town. And, you know, like, we just had, it was just that passion, man, that desire. Like, I knew at 9 years old, like, that's exactly what I was going to do. Like, there was something in me. Like, I was like, I'm going to do this. This is what I'm going to be. And I wasn't going to stop until, you know, like, I made it.
Did everyone in town know you guys as, like, the guys that put on shows and wrestled and stuff?
Yeah, man. Like, they, you know, once we started in doing the trampoline stuff, like, we would do, like, the local fair. But we'd also, like, would do videotapes of our little shows. Like, even the trampoline days, Matt would put them in the video store, the local video stores. And people would actually, like, rent the videos and watch them. So, like, it was crazy, man, just at that time, just kind of, I guess, what we had sparked. Or, you know, like, maybe it was going on everywhere, but, like, just for us, like, we were just doing our own thing. Like, we wasn't copying nobody. We were just trying to raise the bar and just do something different to be noticed.
And did you ever think did you ever think at that time that so many people would have went on to actually become real wrestling stars?
At that time, like, it was so, it wasn't really, we didn't really understand the business. Like, it was just fun and it was just a love and passion we had. And I don't even think, you know, at that time, like, we were trying to, or we didn't even understand what making a living was or the business aspect of pro wrestling. I don't think it was just a passion that we had, just, and a brotherhood. Like, we were such a tight group, man, like, all of us. And we were having so much fun. And at that time, too, like, I lost my dad at an early age just because he was in a car wreck. And he was paraplegic. So really didn't have a father figure. And for me, like, you know, all these guys were kind of like my father figures, too. And I was learning so much just being on the road with them.
And, you know, if you think about it, it's really an amazing story. Because with all you guys ran a promotion. Like, what was that Omega promotion like? You guys made money? Was it was profitable?
Yeah. You know, I was pretty much, from the time I really started, I mean, we were making money off Omega. But, I mean, indies, we were doing good, man. Because, you know, North Carolina at the time, like, we were just, I guess we were kind of a hot item because we were young, like, good-looking guys. And, you know, like, I remember, like, you know, later whenever I was 15 or 16, I went on to Music City Wrestling out in Nashville, and I was pretty much a regular there every weekend. And, man, even going out there, like, you know, my payday wasn't but 60, 70 bucks. But, man, like, the merch sales that I would get at that time, just with business being so good, you know, I'd make $200-$300 a show, like, just selling pictures and stuff, especially out in Nashville. And, you know, we just hustled, man. Like, we did so many shows and everything. We were just making a living, just hustling.
Did any guys give you shit when you started doing, like, real shows, saying, like, you know, that you guys weren't real professionals, or, you know, you were just trampoline or backyard wrestlers?
Yeah, there was a lot. There was some guys that were jealous. I don't know if they were jealous more or less about us, you know, kind of learning on our own, or if they were more jealous because we had such a tight-knit group. And, you know, Joey Abs, which was you'll know him as Joey Abs, but Jason, he was the bigger guy of the group. And, you know, like, he was, I don't know, I guess he was the most mature out of the group, like, man, he was kind of like a man's man. And, like, nobody would really fuck with us because, you know, like, not only did we have all different ages or whatever, but, you know, there was a couple legit, like, badasses, you know, like, in our group that we really didn't take no shit. So nobody would be outspoken about it. But there was a lot of guys that, I guess, that whole jealousy thing, because, like, we just kind of did our own thing and we had so much fun on the road. And, you know, like, even today, like, you can see that whenever you're having fun on the road, like, there's just some guys that's just bitter and shit. And, like, they'll hate on you just because you still have a passion and love for the business.
And how did you guys all feel when Matt and Jeff eventually went to be full-time for WWF at the time?
Oh, dude, it was awesome. You know, like, they were going up as extras, you know, for a long time before they actually got signed. But, you know, at that time, like, all of our careers were kind of taking off. Like, you know, me and Shane, we were out in Nashville. We were doing the Music City thing around that same time. And everybody was really busy, and you could just feel the momentum, like, with everybody just taking off. And, you know, just we all knew that it was just a matter of time before we all were going to end up somewhere. And, like, for me, you know, like, we were super proud, especially whenever Matt and Jeff signed. But, you know, shortly after, I got my opportunity in WCW. And, you know, I was shooting for WCW because I was a smaller guy. And, you know, like, I've been up to WWE a couple of times just hanging out. Like, whenever Matt and Jeff would go up, they were like, Chief Wahoo McDaniel, like, you know, I'd talk to him, and it was always about my size. And even Dr. Tom Pritchard, like, he had seen a tape with me and Jeff whenever I was like 15 or 16. And he's like, man, you got to put some size on. And, so I knew that my best shot was going to be WCW because the luchadors sure had just hit the scene there. And I knew I fit that mold more.
And talking of WCW, the word I see is that you were reached out to by Chris Canyon to get involved in WCW. Is that true?
Yeah, that was, it was more of a timing thing. Cause I was, like I said, I was out in Nashville for Music City Wrestling. That was a national, broadcasted TV deal that they had for Music City Wrestling. It was all over the country, but it hit a lot in Atlanta. And at the time, like, I was so ready just to go to WCW. Like, I had that, I don't know, just that burn to be there. And I remember I talked to Matt about it, and I was like, hey, man, like, you know, how should I approach this? You know, like, he's like, dude, do whatever you got to do. He said, even though you've been wrestling a while, like, you know, just see if you can go to the power plant and just be seen. So I called Chris Canyon. And I actually left him a message, and I was like, hey, this is Shannon Moore. You know, I don't know if you know who I am, but, you know, like, Matt and Jeff, you did a lot of stuff with them at WWE while they were extras there. And, you know, Matt said to call you, you're a cool guy. And I was like, you know, I want to do whatever I can to possibly get down to the power plant and just train some, just to see if I could be seen. Well, Canyon called me back the next day, and we had a short conversation. Basically, he told me, he's like, dude, right now, he goes, I know who you are. He said, your work's great. But right now, like, I just don't think that there's going to be anything for you, you know, at the power plant, because he said that it would probably be just unnecessary to come down and just start training from the start again. So we hung up there. And, dude, the next day, like, timing was everything on this. Eric Bischoff, you know, from what Canyon had told me, Eric Bischoff gave him the power to hire 21 cruiserweights that were 21 years old or younger.
Oh, my and, God.
Yeah, and the idea of it was pretty much, Eric had an idea to do, and I haven't had this conversation with Eric, but from everything that I know, Eric had the idea to do the Tough Enough type show /, like, Road Rules type show, and he was going to put 21 cruiserweights in a house and have them live together and just show them, you know, taking steps to get on TV and train and do the whole deal. But, yeah, whenever he called me, I was the first one. He goes, you're the first one I've called, dude. I can't believe you called me yesterday just asking for an opportunity. He's like, and pretty much he's like, your contract's in the mail. Give me your address. So, dude, I had an address on or a contract on the way just after that phone call. 2 days later, I got a contract in the mail.
So just like that, the dream is coming true. Now, how does that turn into the infamous three count? You know, of course, it teamed you up with your old buddy Shane Helms, your old tag team partner, and, you know, Cameron buddy, and also Evan Courageous. And we know Jimmy Hart came up with the music, but how was that presented to you? What did you think about that? And what was the timing of that like?
Dude, that the three count thing. This is gonna be a little long winded because it was just these crazy steps that brought three count even into the picture. But basically, the idea for the Tough Enough Road Rules thing kind of got scrapped, and they were gonna fire. Well, they did fire pretty much most of the cruiserweights that they hired immediately, except like I don't know, four or five of us. And so, anyways, they told me and Shane, well, they wanted me, they hadn't seen me wrestle live yet, so they still wanted me to come and do like a match before a Nitro so that Eric and everybody could see me work. And Canyon's like, well, who do you want to work? And like, obviously I was like, Rey Mysterio. Rey's like, he's going to be on TV. Like somebody that, you know, is probably not going to be on TV or somebody you could bring. So I ended up taking Shane Helms down. And we did a match there. They ended up signing Shane after they seen Shane work. And anyways, after that, once they did the firing process with the other guys, they wanted me and Shane to go down to Atlanta to the power plant because, you know, we wasn't really doing nothing but sitting home collecting a check at that point. So me and Shane went down, and like the power plant, man, they were down there. And there was a bunch of young guys for WCW down there just beating people up. And you know, like me and Shane, we've been working for a while. So like, you know, after about 2 weeks of that shit, like I got hurt, like somebody kneed me in the temple and gave me a concussion. Me and Shane, we pretty much decided that we were going to go to Paul Orndorff and just tell him that we wanted to go home. And, you know, like everybody's like, nah, you shouldn't do it. But me and Shane, like, we were like, dude, we don't know how this is going to go. Cause we've heard stories about Paul, like, you know, having knives and guns and shit in his desk. And like flipping out on people whenever they tried to like ask to do something. So me and Shane was like, all right, I don't know how this is going to go, man. But if he pulls a knife or something, like we just got to figure out how to take him out and not get killed whenever we ask to go home. So we go into Paul Orndorff. We're like, hey, man, you know, pretty much like we're basically tired of being here. You know, we want to go home. We don't think that we need to be here. And Paul's like, he's like, yeah, guys, like you guys are great. You know, pretty much put us over to our face. He's like, you know, you guys really don't need to be here. I don't know why you're here anyways. We're like, oh, cool. This went pretty smooth. So we left, and then Paul put us on like a list to be fired, like immediately. And so we get a phone call from Jimmy Hart then going, guys, what are y'all doing, baby? Like, Paul, you know, he put you on a list. You're going to be fired. He's like, but don't worry about it. I got an idea that's going to, you know, keep you guys your job. He's like, and he told us the idea. Long story short, we ended up in the studio with him singing the song. And, you know, and Jimmy said, like, Jimmy thought, because Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake and everybody was really hot at the time. And Jimmy's like, man, you guys, you know, you're young. You look good. Like, you guys, you know, you guys are going to be big pop stars. Like, not only wrestlers, but I think we can make you guys pop stars, too, and actually tour. And I'm just sitting there, I'm going, dude, I can't sing. I can't fucking dance. Like, I don't know what this dude, what he's thinking about this being a legit band. But anyways, we went in the studio and, you know, we sung a couple of songs. And you know, we just was waiting for him to kind of debut three count. And finally, I think it was Washington, D.C., Vince Russo ended up debuting us. And it got a really good reaction, but we'd go out and we'd rip it up, man, like our matches with the Young Dragons and stuff. And, you know, but once we started doing the thing, like, like people hated us because, you know, it's pro wrestling and these, you know, you didn't want to see monsters and, you know, but Arn had the idea to, you know, send us out six times a show singing and dancing and make the people just hate us. And it worked, man. Like, you know, at times, I mean, there'd be so much trash in the ring, you couldn't bump. Like, it was just throwing shit at us.
And the song is so memorable. So many people still remember the words of the song if you're a real wrestling fan, you know?
Dude, the people still sing that shit today. Like, it's so crazy. Whenever, like, every show I go to now, like, is, you know, like, somebody singing the song, hey, when's Three Count going to reunite? And, you know, and I remember thinking at the time, too, because, like, I was always, like, deep down, like, I wanted to be a rock star. Because, you know, I played electric guitar, and I was like, man, a pop star, this ain't really what, but, you know, it was wrestling, so I just ran with it, and it was really fun, man, like, it was a good opportunity, and, you know, like, we ended up being kind of the go-to for good matches at the time, because, you know, Matt and Jeff were at WWE with the Dudleys doing these ladder matches and stuff, and, you know, there's a couple of Starcades that they called on us for ladder matches, and, you know, like, just pay-per-views and shit, like, to try to compete with what WWE was doing ladder matches.
Wasn't it one time Joey Mercury and Christian York, like, were they going to be a part of the group too, and then they came up with the name Three Count, and it was just three of you? Is that true?
The deal with Joey Mercury and Christian York was we were already kind of a boy band parody in Music City Wrestling out there for Bill Barons and Burt Prentice. We were called the Bad Street Boys, and we did a music video and stuff out in Nashville, and you know, that was kind of our deal that for that year out in Nashville where we were, you know, and out there, like, we were super baby faces because something about the area, I don't, you know how it is in Nashville, Robbie, just working out there, but, you know, like, the young girls, like, they just dig shit like that. Yeah, so that's why we were making good money off gimmicks and stuff out there because, you know, like, the boy band thing kind of worked there. And then it kind of, I guess the gimmick, you know, once they really researched the gimmick, I don't know if Jimmy got the idea from that and ran with it or if it was just something that he was thinking would work with us.
Well, let's talk a little bit about something you talked about, which is, you know, the Young Dragons and that feud. And for yourself, I remember watching you guys when you first wrestled, and you in particular, even though maybe you're a little undersized, but you were about the same size as, you know, definitely bigger than Ray, or, you know, about the size of a Hoovy or a lot of the cruiserweights. But watching you do a lot of crazy springboards and kind of death-defying moves, and then pairing you guys up with the Young Dragons, who was it that put you guys together?
Jimmy had a lot of pull by that point, like, especially with, like, a Thunder and, you know, a couple of other shows that they were doing besides Nitro. And, you know, I know Kevin Nash at one time, he had the books, and he kind of let Jimmy, you know, do his thing with what Jimmy called his boys. And, like, the Young Dragons, they were, you know, part of Jimmy's little group of guys that he was trying to develop. And, you know, he come up with the Young Dragons thing with Jamie Noble and Jimmy Wang Yang and Cass Ashi. And then, we could all just rip it up, man. And that's just, you know, Jimmy just seen that vision. And then, you know, Kevin being so cool. Like, Kevin was so supportive. And, you know, he was like, these guys work hard. So he wasn't scared to put us on any of the shows, whether it was Nitro or Thunder or whatever. And he just let Jimmy just kind of run with it.
It was kind of a dual-based, it was a two-sided thing because you guys were relied on a lot, just like the early days of Nitro. You know, the cruiserweights relied on a lot to support the show and to bring in eyeballs and to, you know, bring in the wows. But at the same time, you guys weren't really being considered for, like, a title run or weren't considered the top of the card. Did you feel maybe you were exploited a little bit or you weren't appreciated as much as you could have been?
I don't think we were exploited because, you know, like, you know, we got along with all the boys. They, you know, especially all the guys, you know, the, I guess, top guys and stuff. Like, we were appreciated by everybody. Like, you know, Bischoff, while he was there and then he was gone, like, whenever he was there, he was always cool. You know, like, Paige was amazing. DDP, like, he was supportive from day one just because they, you know, everybody would bust their ass. And, you know, like, I'm a firm believer too, man. Like, whenever your work rate can't be, whenever it's undeniable and people see that, I just think you're appreciated, but I think it's still, it comes down to business And, you know, like, I hate using the term politics because, you know, business is business. And, you know, people are going to do whatever they got to do just to keep the business side of things going the way that they see them. And, you know, unfortunately, I think whenever it comes to titles and stuff, like, we wasn't part of that business plan, or they just knew that, you know, we were going to go out and we were going to give it 100%. Like, we were going to rip it up no matter, you know, if we had titles or going to get titles or not. And, you know, and some people just, you know, they'll whine and bitch and complain about, I need the titles. And, like, by that point, like, we really wasn't into that. We just, we wanted to take the opportunity and what TV time we got and just go out and just show anybody that was watching, like, what we could do.
Hey, so guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go? Well, now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in the bedroom. Listen up.
BlueChew.com, and it's blue just like the color blue. Now, BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work.
And you can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises.
Blue Chew is prescribed online, and it ships straight to your door in a discreet package. Now, I know people who've gotten this package, and I'm telling you, that's the truth. So no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and the best of all, no more awkwardness.
And they're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a normal pharmacy.
And right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free. You can get it for free. What do you have to lose when you use our special promo code, Robbie? All you have to do is just pay the $5 shipping.
And again, guys, that's BlueChew.com and promo code Robbie. Not Robbie E, Robbie. Try it free today.
And it's Blue Chew, B-L-U-E, chew.com. And it is the better, cheaper, faster choice. And thanks for sponsoring the podcast. Now, I'm not lying. I know some guys who have gotten Blue Chew, and they swear by it. So give it a chance today, bluechew.com/Robbie.
And then how did it end up that you guys were with Tank Abbott?
Dude, that was just something that I guess creative kind of brought about, and they had, you know, like Tank was going to start doing something, and then, you know, like they brought him in, and, you know, I was like, there's no way Tank Abbott's going to want to be part of our boy band, like security or, you know, at first, whatever. But dude, Tank loved it, man. And he lived the gimmick. Like, he legit was like our security guard. Like, if anybody would say anything, like Tank, like he would get hot, and like, If we were out in public, no matter where we're at, like Tank took that, he took it serious, man. Like, he was our legit security.
And, of course, you know, a three count had some great angles with Tank and, of course, those matches with the Young Dragons. But as WCW came to a close, they were purchased by the World Wrestling Federation, World Wrestling Entertainment, and there were some contracts that were bought. Some guys, their contracts were bought, they were never used. Some guys were brought to the main roster, but you were one of the few who were signed but sent down developmental. What was it like to know that you were signed, first of all? And second of all, what was it like to be sent down to work in Heartland?
Obviously I was terrified, like, you know, if I was going to get picked up or not. But once I was told that, you know, and I met with JR, and everything was good, like, you know, I knew immediately, like, they weren't going to send me right to TV because, you know, there was just too many of the guys, like, going up. Like, they just didn't have enough TV time for everybody. And I kind of knew that once, you know, without anybody telling me that. But they didn't tell me that I was going to HWA. I actually kind of, I don't know, maybe, I think I kind of painted myself into that spot. Because, like, I told JR and asked him, I was going to go on a couple of European tours. Actually, I was supposed to go with Blue Meanie and Jasmine St. Clair at the time. And I called JR about it. And I was like, hey, can I do these tours, you know, until you guys figure out what you're going to do with me? And he was like, well, let me check. And like the next day he called me. He's like, hey, we want you to go. And they told me what they were doing with HWA. And they, you know, Memphis was closing down at the time, I believe. And you know, they sent like Umaga and Charlie Haas and that crew to HWA too. And they told me I'd be there for a couple of weeks. So I just packed enough clothes to go for a couple of weeks. And I ended up staying there for almost 9 months, I think.
And eventually you get the call that you're going to be brought up to SmackDown, being kind of a underling to Matt Hardy as the Mattitude follower. Who was the one who told you that you were coming up, and how did you feel about your new role?
Well, I was actually on the road for a while before the whole Mattitude follower thing happened. You know, me and Jamie, we got pulled up about the same time just for the whole Cruiserweight thing. And, you know, like we were just doing, God, we did a bunch of house shows, just me versus Jamie and just some, I don't know if they were planning to do some Cruiserweight stuff between me and Jamie or what, but I just remember when we first got caught up, Chris Benoit, you know, like I love Chris and just, he was amazing just as far as just trying to get us where we needed to be. And he just wanted us working hard and, you know, like he wanted us working like Chris Benoit. So me and Jamie, man, we killed each other for several months just on the road doing these. Man, we'd come back with loose teeth and like just beat the shit out of each other. And finally, like me and Jamie, we had to have a talk. And I'm like, dude, we can't keep doing this, man. Like,
somebody's gonna die. Injured before.
Yeah, like we were killing each other. And I think Benoit, he loved to watch it. And, you know, whenever we'd get back, like, yeah, that was great. But I think, I don't know if he was ribbing us or what, because he's like, man, you guys need to go out there. You need to kill each other. You need to be stiffs. And like, so we'd go out there and just beat the shit out of each other, man. Like, I just remember after about 2 weeks, like, you know, it was like, man, like, dude, I think I got a concussion. Like, my teeth were all just loose and my nose was broke. And then from there, like, you know, we just started going to TVs and stuff. And, you know, I got bounced around and just several different things. And then finally ended up in the Mattitude follower thing. And I think that was actually Matt's idea to put me with him and become his Mattitude follower.
And the WWE locker room must have been a whole different scene for you. Like, what was it like back there once you got brought up to SmackDown? What were the differences? What were the politics like? You get along with everybody?
Yeah, I got along with everybody, man. Like, I didn't, because I'd already knew a lot of the guys. Just, I'd either met them, like, you know, either just out of partying at a bar and, you know, being in the town that they were from, or WWE might be close by and everybody would meet up. Or I met them even before WCW, like, just going up or meeting them, you know, whenever Matt and them would do spot work up there. But at that time, man, yeah, like, the locker room was great, and I was always treated good. Like, I can't complain about nobody, man. Like, I've never been the type, like, to dislike or not get along with people in locker rooms anyways. Like, for some, you know, I've always tried to keep it positive and have a good time. So, yeah, I didn't have no kind of problems with anybody.
And then when you went through that little phase where you were wrestling all the big guys, was that on your first WWE run or your second?
I believe that was probably toward the end of my first run. So I was there for several years on TV. And that was actually something that I would always ask for, too. I always took a lot of pride in, like, just making guys look good. And I know some people, they always want more. Like, you know, I want to be champion. I want to do this. But, like, for me, like, it, you know, like, I just love the art of pro wrestling. And no matter what my spot was, I just always thought I could be creative and just try to make the best of it. And just, you know, like some of the stuff I'll do with the big guys, like I thought it was awesome, like just being able to have that spot. So I didn't mind it at all whenever I, you know, I got put in that role.
How was it wrestling Brock back then?
Oh, dude, like Brock, he's awesome, man. Like he was always super cool to me. And like there was times like where, you know, like, I was like, man, he's just going to run through me. But, like, you know, like, he would do some cool stuff with me. And, you know, I think just by, actually, with Brock, I think by, you know, taking some of the crazy bumps and stuff that I would take, like, I don't know, I think I got a little, I don't want to say respect, but it was more or less like he appreciated what I did for him. in some of that stuff. And, like, he's always treated me super cool, like, you know, since then. Like, he was always cool before, but after I got to work with him, like, you know, I don't know, like, I considered him, you know, I consider Brock a friend now, like, after working with him. But, yeah, he's the strongest dude I've ever been in the ring with. And, like, just the power that he has in his body, like, there was times where, like, just whenever he would grab me, I'm like, this dude would just, like, he could rip me apart in no time, like, just kill me.
So how did it end up that you eventually left WWE the first time?
I think it was just after being there for a while. You know, I've been there for, it was just that, I think that stupid mindset that I think everybody goes through, especially whenever you, you know, you get your first opportunities, you know, you start getting just comfortable and complacent, and then you want more, like, you want more opportunities instead of just kind of going, okay, like, this is where I'm at, and, you know, I'm just going to do the best that I can do with what I got. And a lot of it was just, I think, just negative energy and just kind of focusing on what I wanted rather than being appreciative of what I had. And, you know, then whenever it comes time for business and to make some of those business changes, whenever it comes to money or finances, like, I was just one of those unfortunate guys that got cut.
And at the time, though, you know, you just got out of a car crash and you recovered and then you got your release. It seemed like they were kind of flirting with the idea of you being kind of a big part of the show and then a cruiserweight, and then you would get squashed, and then you would be, it was hard to find your place ultimately in that first run. Where did you see yourself going if it was up to you?
As far as a promotion from there?
Yeah.
Well, I knew, like, me and Jeff Jarrett, like, we were always friends through WCW, and, like, you know, he's somebody that I've always looked up to in the business. And, like, I always just, I don't know, he was always kind of we've just so many deep conversations and stuff. He knew the situation, like my dad, and, you know, just a lot of stuff like that. He become kind of a mentor to me. And I knew, you know, if I ended up leaving WWE, that I wanted to go to work for Jeff.
When you got to TNA, that was the first time we ever saw the Prince of Punk, you know, a kind of character where you changed from the young high flyer to the guy with the spiked up mohawk and the tattoos and all that stuff. And was that your idea, or was that somebody else's idea?
That was completely mine. You know, cause WCW, I had to do the whole pop thing, and I wanted to do more of a punk rock character. And, at the time, Marilyn Manson had did like this whole glam rock thing. You know, I kind of took that and I tried, you know, it took a while to kind of morph it into something that looked cool. Cause like there was definitely some stages that I went through, like growing my mohawk out and just kind of playing with different looks. And some of the looks just now I look back and I'm like, oh, that's disgusting. it was my idea, the whole Prince of Punk thing, and just kind of just morphing it into something that I had this vision of. And, It was fun to, you know, finally have an opportunity to do that in TNA, because right before, you know, whenever I showed up to TNA, I finally kind of dialed it in to where it looked decent.
And that was pretty, that TNA run was pretty short lived, right? Because you went back to WWE soon.
Yeah, man, it was, I got there, Jeff immediately, they put me on TV. Like, we did some cool vignette stuff with the X Division. Like, you know, I was going to punk the X Division because, you know, the whole punk show was on. And we were going off that a little bit. And Jeff and them, they treated me right, man. They, you know, and but at the time I was going through a divorce. It was my first divorce. And, you know, like, I needed guaranteed money to know how, you know, because, man, at the time, like, I had like $500,000 house that I just bought, just, you know, because I was in WWE, so, you know, obviously, like, I did what everybody does whenever they start making money, and, you know, I bought Corvettes and like, all this nonsense that I should have probably bought. So then, you know, once I was going through my divorce, you know, like, half my money that I'd saved from WCW, like, I knew that was going to probably be gone. And it was going to be hard. And, you know, I was talking to Dixie and him, and I'm like, look, it's just business. But, you know, I've got an opportunity to go back to WWE now. But I need, you know, like, I'd like to stay. I just need to know, you know, what kind of money that it is, you know, I'm going to be making. And ultimately, I ended up having to leave and go back and try to rebound some money.
So they obviously said they couldn't match what WWE was offering you?
Yeah. Yeah.
How long did you end up being there? What, like 3-4 months? Was it even that long?
Back in WWE? Yeah.
I think it was
more than that. Oh, in TNA? Yeah, I was there for probably 6 months, maybe 5 months.
And then you went right back to TV and WWE?
Yeah, then I went back to WWE.
I think somebody must have seen your new gimmick and must have said, wow, I think that's something we can work with. And you were brought right away to ECW. When you were signed, what did they tell you they were going to do with you?
Well, whenever the whole deal going back, like, you know, I thought it was because I'd actually called the office and, you know, once Dixie wouldn't let me know, like, they kept telling me, like, yeah, your contract's coming, but I could never get no figures on what I was going to be making to kind of come out of that divorce. You know, Dixie, you know, she kept telling me my contract was coming, but, you know, like, after I was at a TNA taping one night, and I may have been doing something with AJ, like, doing some, I think AJ was in the main event, and I got through in the main event for a few weeks with AJ, and I was like, shit, man, and I actually called Vince's office, and I was like, hey, you know, because at the time I was married to Julie Youngberg, which is a seamstress at WWE, and I'd sent some pictures and like a DVD of the recent stuff I was doing with AJ in the ring, you know, just in case they hadn't seen it. And I actually called Vince's office and left him a message like, hey, this is Shannon Moore. I'm interested in coming back. I don't know if you've seen what I've been doing, but Julie's got a DVD and like some pictures and stuff of what my look like is now that I wanted to do in WWE. And I'm just curious if you guys are interested. And the next night at TV, at the TNA tapings, like, I'd got done and I was actually, I'll never forget, I left the Doubletree and I was walking across the parking lot to go eat. And Johnny Ace called me and he's like, hey kid, Vince, he got a hold of your DVD and last night, you know, I don't know if the writers watched it or who watched it. I think Paul Heyman watched it. And I'll tell you why in a second, but he's like, but your contract's in the mail. Like, we want to bring you back. And I was like, oh shit, who? And then like 30 seconds later, Jeff Jarrett called me and he's like, hey, we got something to talk about. We need to talk about. And I was like, yeah, I guess so, dude. Like, I'm sorry, man, but you know, like, this divorce is killing me and I just, you know, I got to make some money. And, I ended up talking to Jarrett and, you know, like, I'm sure he, you know, like, I don't know. I feel bad because, you know, like, the whole friendship and business thing. And I felt like I kind of turned my back on him. But at the same time, like, it was just business. And I was just going, man, like, obviously he's in the business so long. Hopefully he'll understand. Like, I need to make some good money right now. And I ended up going back out of that. And the reason I think Paul Heyman is the one that seen, he was one of the ones that seen my look and stuff was because, like, I didn't know Punk at the time. I didn't even know who he was. Like, cause I wasn't following much indie wrestling. And, I knew, I guess Paul Heyman knew that they were going to bring Punk up and debut him on ECW about the same time. And at that point, I think it was just since I was doing the whole Punk thing and trying to run that, and then his name was CM Punk, they knew they were going to invest in him. I think they pretty much just brought me back to kind of squash that character, because after a while, once I feuded with Punk, they wanted me to change my look.
Wow, that's, you know, that makes sense, because you both had vignettes when WWECW first debuted on Sci-Fi, and it didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, because I thought, you know, here's Shannon Moore again. He's got this great character, but you just lost a couple times, and then we didn't see you that much. So it was probably, you know, what you're saying is that it was almost like you were set up to fail as far as that character and a way of building up CM Punk when he debuted.
Yeah, totally. 100% now looking back, like that's why they brought me back so quick. You know, that's why I got that phone call immediately, because, you know, I think that they knew that I was on TNA, and, you know, TNA was putting me over as, you know, whether not really a punk rocker, but the term punk was used a lot. And, you know, them pushing CM Punk, I think that they only wanted one person in the business to be using that whole punk saying, or, you know, whatever lifestyle, or, you know, whatever it was that they wanted to squash. Like, I totally believe that, you know, that character was just kind of brought back to be killed.
And how long did it end up that you lasted in WWE this time? Was it a year, 2 years?
Yeah, I stayed there several years, and like, I grew my hair back out long. And I think at that point, like, me and Jimmy Wang Yang started tagging, and then Miz and Morrison, they just started tagging. And we had a big run. We ran with them for, God, 8 months probably, like, just from doing house shows to Europe shows and all kinds of stuff to SmackDown. And we wrestled them a ton. And then we actually, right before I left this next time, me and Jimmy Wang Yang, we were going to win the titles from Miz and Morrison, and then we were going to keep the titles and go into WrestleMania and have a big blow-off match with Miz and Morrison at Mania. But something happened, like, the Friday before we were supposed to win the titles on Tuesday, I ended up getting fired again. So, like, I guess, you know, like, it was so out of the blue, too, because I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, you know, I got home from TV, like, we had a killer match with Miz and Morrison on SmackDown, and then the following SmackDown, we were going to win the titles and then, you know, move on into WrestleMania. But, you know, whenever I got home, I was on cloud nine, because I'm like, oh, this is a cool program. And then Friday, I get a phone call, like, hey, by the way, you're getting fired.
That's so weird. Did other people get fired too, or was it just you?
No, there was some, you know, like, several other people that got fired at the time. Okay. So I don't know if, you know, super. I just wasn't. Yeah, just, you know, I guess bad luck on my part.
When you, if you look back on that time, you sent, you know, Vince and company the DVD, the pictures. They saw your look. They brought you up. They sold you on the fact they liked your look and the thing you were going for. And then they have a conversation with you to change your look, you know, and to stop doing that. What was that conversation like? Were they like, hey, kid, we liked what you did, but we're trying something different? Or they said, totally play down the punk thing now? Like, what did they say to you?
It was just, I mean, you know, like, I don't think nobody's intentionally, you know, like, just trying to be mean to me or anything. Like, it was just, you know, like, the writers would present it to me. They're like, you know, what do you think about growing your hair back out and having long hair and just going back to more of a pretty boy image and, like, doing that. And, like, you know, at that point, like, I'd already started really feeling my character, doing the whole punk thing in TNA. And I started, that's whenever, from a character standpoint, I really started, like, just feeling my character in the ring and how to really work and, like, walk and talk with that character. And, you know, like, then going back to just the long hair, just normal look, kind of, I don't know, like, I wasn't really into it. I mean, I was willing to do whatever, because obviously, like, they're the boss and you can do whatever to make the boss happy as long as you want a job. And, but, you know, whenever I started doing it, I just felt so uncomfortable doing it because I just felt like I didn't have no character no more.
It seems to me like in these two runs, you know, your first run in WWE, there's a lot of stops, starts and stops, you know, a lot of different things you're involved in, you know, the big guys, you know, and even wrestling JBL for the championship. And then in your second run, you know, they bring you back as the punk thing and they have you involved even the first in it, you know, even the first time they had you doing the like a lot of cruiserweight stuff. Then they have you involved in the cruiserweight stuff again, then the tag team, a lot of starts and stops. It was hard for you to find your place. Is that just because of your size, or Like, is there something you can attribute to not really finding your foothold? When I talk to people about you, they say talented, underrated, underutilized. Why was it so hard for you to find your foothold in that WWE hierarchy?
I just think that it was just timing, like just a lot of it with me, because, you know, I know Vince and like I'm pretty sure Stephanie and like anybody there knew that I could get the job done, no matter if it was, you know, put me out there with Mysterio, put me out there with Brock, like I could get the job done, you know. Obviously, like I wasn't ready for, like, cause now, like where I'm at now in the ring compared to then, like, you know, like I obviously, like looking back now, like I wasn't ready for no kind of like, you know, championship run or, you know. And at the time, like you think it, like you're going, man, like, you know, just put me in there and just, you know, give me a shot. But, you know, like sometimes this, I think we're lucky not to get the shot, because, you know, like if you do get that shot, I think like you just got to be 100% ready to seize the moment. And, you know, like I, as far as the tag team titles and stuff like that, like I know we're ready. And, you know, as far as me getting fired, I don't think it was just anybody just going, oh, this guy sucks, or, you know, like this guy can't work, or he's not ready to be here. I just think it was, you know, like a budget thing slash just what do we do with him? You know, what are we going to, you know, he's been here for a while. What do we do with him? Let's let him go out and, you know, restructure himself and just see what happens, you know? Cause it just seems like that's just kind of the way the company works.
And then afterwards, so now you, how long was it until you went to TNA for your second time there?
By that point I was a little beaten, banged up. And, you know, like I was disgruntled. Like I was, you know, I was a little let down, especially the way that ended. Just kind of, I was really looking forward to winning the tag titles and doing that run and going to Mania and wrestling them in Mania for the tag titles. But, you know, I got a little disgruntled, and I actually took like 5 months off, and I wasn't even thinking about going anywhere at that point. Like how that happened was Umaga, me and Jeff, you know, we were real good friends with Umaga, and he come to visit. And, you know, Umaga, the Hulkamania tour to Australia was getting ready to happen. And, Umaga's like, you know, why don't you go with me? And, you know, at the time I was like, dude, I'm not in shape. I'm not ready. Like, dude, I haven't even been training. Like, I don't want to go on this tour and just look like an idiot. He's like, nah, just let's do it, man. So anyways, Umaga, you know, he called Rikishi, and they added me to the Hulkamania tour. And, you know, I busted my ass trying to get in the best shape as possible over the next couple of weeks to do that. And we went on tour, did the Hulkamania tour. And while we were over there, like, you know, I hung out with Hogan a lot, and, you know, Bischoff, and just we had a lot of downtime just to kind of hang out, talk business. And, at the time, like Hogan, you know, he had asked me if I thought that Jeff would be interested, because Jeff was, you know, in between companies and just had taken some time off. And at the time, he was going through his legal stuff. And, you know, I told Hogan, I'm like, look, man, like, I don't know if he'd be interested or not. You know, he's going through his stuff right now. And I was like, but I'd love to come. Like, if you guys are going to go there and, you know, things are going to be restructured. And I was like, I'd love to be part of it. So I ended up getting home. And then me and Jarrett, we talked a lot about Jeff, like seeing if Jeff Hardy would be interested. And I talked to Hardy, and, you know, I was like, dude, let's do it. Let's just, you know, get your mind off all this other stuff and let's just go have some fun. And I don't know, we ended up working it out, man, where me and Jeff, you know, through Jarrett and through Hogan, like we just ended up going, or I ended up going back to TNA with Jeff Hardy.
And, it seems to me, as someone who watched you a long time, that like Jeff Hardy, at least style-wise, was someone you looked up to. Is your relationship with Jeff and Matt still as strong as it ever was?
Yeah, man. You know, like me and Jeff, we've been best friends since I was, you know, since we were kids. And we were, you know, inseparable just going through the indie scene. And, you know, like we've worked together, you know, just 1,000 times. And, you know, our styles, they're a lot alike. Like all the Omega guys kind of had, you know, a mixture of Japanese and like Lucha and American style, just everything kind of mixed together. And, you know, just working together a lot and just that camaraderie we always had and just being best friends, like we, you know, our styles kind of did match.
And then how did you compare that TNA run to your first run there? Did the company change when you got there? Was it different?
It had changed a little bit, but like, dude, like my first run and then like that run, like, you know, we were doing, I think that's whenever we was doing a lot of house shows, like, you know, Don West was there and like Jarrett was, you know, really putting effort into the house shows. And, you know, the house shows are fun. Like we, you know, we run every weekend. Like I remember, you know, like for a year, like, dude, we were busy as everything, man, like with house shows and TVs. And like, it just seemed like TNA was getting some momentum from a, like a business standpoint and things were coming together. You know, because it just seemed like just everything was starting to just kind of gel as far as the house shows go. Because, you know, there'll be, you know, good little houses at the shows and, you know, like merch, like Don, you know, they were making money on merch. And it was, you know, for me, like I had a blast. I thought it was great. Yeah, I was treated well. Like, you know, I was doing fun stuff on TV, you know, getting to work with some amazing guys. And, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, you know, like they were all kind of bitter. But, you know, by that point, like I started understanding the business more and just, you know, really being appreciative for, you know, like having a job doing what I love and, you know, financially being successful doing what I love.
And then how did your exit from TNA happen this time?
Let me see. Well, it started, I guess, you know, like TNA just kind of started, you know, breaking apart and stuff. And I got bitter because, like, I was kind of on a roll, like, doing some good stuff. And then, you know, like, 1 week, you know, this person will be calling the shots. The next week, this person will be calling the shots. You know, then they, you know, this week, nobody knew what they were going to do with you. And it just got to the point where I was getting aggravated. You know, like I'd call Russo and, you know, like talk to him just about, you know, hey, you know, what can we do? And, you know, Vince was always cool, man. Like, you know, I can't say nothing bad about Vince because, you know, Vince was pretty straightforward and just, you know, like, well, you know, right now, like nobody's really wanting to do nothing with you, like as far as really putting, you know, we'll put you in matches and do this, but storyline wise, like we really don't have nothing going on with you. And it just got to the point where I got aggravated and got, I guess, disgruntled, and to that point, you know, like everybody does. And you know, like just you lose that appreciation for just, you know, like having that spot on TV. And my contract was coming up too, and I was having a lot of issues with my neck at the time. And I remember just like 2 weeks before my contract was coming up, I got really aggravated at a pay-per-view and I just went home. I just jumped on a plane and went home. And then, you know, pretty much told him that, you know, like, hey, I'm not going to resign. Like, I'm just going to take some time off. And it was stupid on my part because, you know, like they even called me the next day and they were like, you know, they were like, well, you know, we'll up your contract. We'll give you some more money. And, you know, like Bruce Prichard was awesome, man. Like he, you know, he talked to me about, you know, re-signing and, you know, he was being super cool about, you know, like, dude, like just re-sign. Like it's all good. And I was like, nah, I was just kind of down and out and I just wanted to take some time off. So that's just kind of how I exited, just kind of, you know, to myself. I was just telling myself that, you know, I just need some time to let my body heal and just let my mind heal up before I, you know, got back in the ring.
So looking back at your career, do you have any things that you look back at now and say you would have done things different, or are you happy how it all ended up?
I definitely would have re-signed at the end of TNA right there, like looking back. But I just, you know, like being in that funk, like I think everybody gets there. Like once you're in a place and you're on the road and, you know, you just get mentally drained and physically drained. And then, you know, your emotions start playing a part of your decisions. And I think that's one thing I would have done. Like I would have re-signed then. And I wish that, you know, like whenever I did go back to WWE, like I would have just maybe asked more questions and maybe asked more questions. Like I wish I would have actually talked to Jarrett before I made the phone call to go back to WWE and just see, you know what I mean? Just get somebody that's been in the business that's dealt with those pinch decisions that you have to make. Because once you make a decision, you know, at that time too, like once I called Vince or I left a message for Vince, I think that, you know, once you get that phone call, like, hey, you know, your message is heard, like you can come back. Like there's no, you can't say no to Vince.
Yeah. Cause then you'll never have a chance again. I mean?
Yeah, and you just don't. Like, it's just bad business. But I do wish that before I made that phone call, I would have kind of communicated more with, you know, like, instead of going to Dixie or going to the lawyer in TNA and talking about contract stuff, I wish I would have just went to Jarrett and just sit down and had just a serious conversation.
Well, it seems to me, though, I've seen you wrestle recently, and you're 39 years old. You're younger than the two guys who wrestled for the SmackDown Championship at SummerSlam. You know, you're younger than AJ and Samoa Joe. You're in tremendous shape. You still have a tremendous look. Is it over for you? Because I can see you doing great, you know, at 205 or NXT or a lot of different things. Are you still pursuing the wrestling career? Because it could still be out there for you.
Yeah, 100%, man. I'm in the best shape of my life right now. I've never been in this good of shape. My body feels better than it did when I signed with WCW right now. Like, I have no injuries whatsoever. I don't know what it is. Like, I still have the passion, the fire, and the desire to just, you know, to do what I love. And, like, if, you know, if the opportunity arises, like, with WWE, like, I would be back in a minute. And if the opportunity, you know, no matter where it's at, like, if, you know, if it's New Japan, if it's ROH, if it's, you know, if it's Impact, like, I don't know if there's something from a business standpoint that makes good enough sense for me signing a contract and just having to be loyal to one company. Like, I'm all about it, man. Like, I'm pursuing it. I just recently, you know, reached out to Japan. Like, I would love to go to Japan for a while. Like, and you know, I don't have kids or nothing, and you know, pro wrestling is pretty much, it's been my life, and it's pretty much all I have in my life, other than, you know, like tattooing. Like, it's cool and stuff, but my passion's still wrestling. And you know, like, if I had to move to Japan to do whatever, or if, you know, I'm willing to do whatever to keep pursuing what I love.
And probably, you know, at your age, you know, like I said, I've seen you wrestle in the last couple of years. I think you're as good as you ever were. You definitely look as good as you ever did. You know, you've got the whole look together, and you're great in the ring. And I think people are missing the boat if they don't give Shannon Moore another chance to show what he can do on a big stage.
Yeah, I'm, you know, like, I've updated my look, you know, from the whole Mohawk and TNA look. I completely up, you know, I got dreads now, and like, I got a dreaded mohawk. Like, just, you know, I've went to different tights, and just my body, like my, you know, my diet and my training, you know, that was one thing that I wanted to take to the next level. Cause I never really, you know, like, I thought I was training back in the day, but I wasn't training. Like, you know, I've been, just as far as researching, dieting, and actually digging in and learning about this stuff, like I've kind of took all that stuff to like a whole new level, and just to get my body where it needs to be and just be healthy as possible. But yeah, man, I appreciate it. Like I'm really putting a lot of effort and, you know, stepping my game up in the ring. And, you know, like for me, I don't stop learning, man. Like every time I'm on a show, like I learn something new, or I'll work with somebody and learn something new. And I'm still a student of the game. Like no matter how long I've been in it, like I'm looking to learn and be better than I was yesterday.
And then if promoters want to reach out to you for bookings or anything, what's the best way to do it?
They can email me at gaschambertattoo@gmail.com, or they can hit me up on Twitter at the Shannon Brand.
Awesome. Okay, cool.
Awesome.
Cool,
man. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We definitely learned a lot about your journey, and I don't think the journey is over yet. And we really appreciate you being here today, Shannon.
Hey, thank you guys for having me, man. Sorry, my throat's a little scratchy. I've been sick the last couple of days, but, yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. Robbie, I appreciate you thinking about me.
Hey, no worries, bro. Hopefully your power comes back on.
Yeah, no shit, right?
Hey, no, it still ain't, man. But, nah, it's cool, man. I'll fly up and just stay with you and the kids, man.
Yeah, that's I think Robbie said it's always an open invitation, man. You can bring the tattoo rig up, man. I think his twins need some tattoos, so I think that'd be great.
Sweet. Oh, dude, the fact that you named one of your kids Cash, right?
Yeah, Cash and Carter.
Cash and Carter. Is that after Johnny Cash?
Yeah, that's where we got the idea from. June Carter, Johnny Cash. Yeah.
Is it? That's awesome, man. Like, if I heard that, I was like, oh, that's so cool.
But, is it weird? Cool, is it weird to think that I have twins?
Dude, it's weird that you have twins, but it's so cool. Like just your relationship with them, like all your training videos and stuff with them. Whenever you're doing like that daddy workout stuff, like it's amazing, man. Like just. I don't know, just seeing you with kids, like it's cool though. It's inspiring. Like, it makes me go, oh man, maybe one day like I could be a dad.
Well, thanks, bro. And thanks for coming on, man. We appreciate it.
All right, man. You fellas have a good night.
All right, man. Thanks a lot, man. Have a good one.
Peace.
Guys, another great interview, asking questions you probably won't hear anywhere else, and getting answers you might not hear anywhere else. What did you think about the Shannon Moore story, Robbie Strauss?
I mean, it was just what I thought it would be. It was super informative, super entertaining to hear some of that backstage stuff. I mean, so think about it. Omega, at what did he say? Was it like, how old was he? He was super young, that he started wrestling so early, and just these kids that were putting on shows like just to entertain themselves almost turned into selling tickets and turned into wrestling careers and superstars being born. And the talent that came out of that little pool there in North Carolina is unbelievable.
And, you know, don't forget, guys, we're going to have more interviews like this, and we're going to have a brand new one up on Patreon. Before you know it, that's patreon.com/WhyItEnded. Of course, you can follow me at Matt Coon Music. You know, Robbie, I'm a little bit of a celebrity now. I must have signed probably about 50 autographs, but nobody actually asked for them at StarCast.
Well, I'm just to be honest, seeing people come up to you and even just say, hey, man, I love your podcast to you, or like ask to shake your hand kind of made me want to throw up in my mouth a little bit. But I mean, it is what it is.
I appreciate it, because the Why It Ended thing is catching on fire. So many people heard my voice and said, I know that voice. And they said, man, I love your work. And I said, oh, you know, what show? And they said, Why It Ended, almost every time. So thank you, everybody, for interacting with us. And check us out on Twitter, at Why It Ended, Instagram, Why It Ended, Robbie E, at Robbie E Impact. And, of course, you can find everything that Robbie's up to on his Twitter and also your website. Right, Robbie?
Yep, Twitter, Robbie E Impact, Instagram, Real Robbie E, and then Robbie-E.com on my website. Pro Wrestling Tees, get the Why It Ended shirts, get the Robbie E shirts. And remember, guys, the Patreon page, we appreciate everything you guys are doing. We're hooking you guys up. And then, of course, also remember, WhyItEndedMail@gmail.com. If you guys want to get some ads on our show, we could squeeze in a few more.
We always can. And we will squeeze in another great interview next week. How'd you like that? On Why
It
Ended. You know, now I'm doing an impression of you doing an impression of me. That's pretty cool.